Clayton. Sean Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Time to talk football with the professor, John Clayton, as we do every day at this time. If you guys have questions for John, text them in right now to 710-710. We'll try to get to some of your questions before we let him go for the day. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
We're good. We're good. Hey, we were talking about the Seahawks start their mandatory minicamp tomorrow.
Right.
What do you think happens with Jamal Adams? I said the best of both worlds. I don't expect him to participate working on a contract, but I'd love for him just to be there where we've seen players hanging out, they're watching, they're talking to guys, but they're not partaking in the actual drills. What do you think happens?
No, I think he shows up. I mean, I don't know if he does much. He may not, and that's understandable because he doesn't want to, you know, get an injury when he's trying to get a contract done. But, you know, Brady Henderson the other day for ESPN.com was saying they're making a little bit of progress, even though they're not close. And I think he wants to stay on the good side and, you know, not showing up, getting a $93,000 fine, that's not going to help matters. You know, it's not like I think that he's going to take the tack that he's going to hold out, but also he'd like to get something done. And if that's going to be the case, I mean, I don't see anything getting done here before like in August, because I think there's going to be time to get this thing done. But I think that, you know, there's got to be a recognition on the Seahawks part. If you don't get it done this year, if the cap goes up significantly, which it looks like it's going to, then it's going to be even more impossible to do it. So it's better to get it done early than late. And, you know, that's why I think you need to get it done before the start of the season.
You know, Dave and I talked about it earlier, saying, you know, John and Pete made this deal and they looked at every angle of it. And part of it is looking at what he was going to require in terms of an extension.
Mm-hmm.
So do you, and then we had somebody saying you guys are giving John and Pete way too much credit. I think that's part of the basics, understanding the dynamics of, okay, he's on a rookie contract. We're going to give up all this draft capital. He's going to want a new deal. We expect it to be somewhere in this neighborhood. I believe they've got a ballpark figure of what it will take to make him happy.
Yeah. The big thing is if Jamal doesn't want to get too greedy about this thing, because I know that he has the record right now for sacks by a defensive back, but if he wants to be a sack guy and try to get the $17 million some defensive end's going to get, then that's not going to work out. I mean, the highest paid safety right now is Justin Simmons from the Denver Broncos, and he makes $15.25 million. And, you know, certainly this team, now that they got the Michael Dixon deal done, has a little bit over an $8 million of cap room. And so my idea is that you go ahead and you try to get him done for 16. You know, maybe you get it from 15.75. I don't think you go to 17, but, you know, 500,000 here or there shouldn't be as much of a difference. And again, it's the way you structure the contract. I mean, you know, if for example, on the average, I mean, if he wants the bigger average, then you backload it. I mean, but you have to try to manage to get it through in a good, positive way. And then I know the other thing that, you know, cropped up today, which I think would be really interesting, and it's, I think there's a lot of divide on the idea. Stephon Gilmore did not show up for the New England Patriots. Okay. Mm-hmm. So he's going to, you know, and there's been rumors the entire off season that he's not going to be with the Patriots this year, that they've shopped him. You know, he wants more money. He's got a $7 million base. And so I think Seattle should get in on that deal. Now, not give a number one. You know, if you get Stephon Gilmore, who in 2019 was Defensive Player of the Year. He's a four-time Pro Bowler, and you know, he had a decent season last year, although I guess he suffered a bad quad injury that he's still trying to recover from. I think what you do is that you know, you see if you can get him for a three and something else and then get him on the roster. You may not give him the contract extension, but I mean, you can take that $7 million and then try to say, okay, we got that. Let's get something done with Adams because we can clear up cap room to be able to do more things. And now you have one of the best secondaries in football with two Pro Bowl safeties, Stephon Gilmore, and either DJ Reed or whoever's going to start on the other side.
So on your scale of 1 to 100, I mean, and likelihood, I mean, this is pretty crazy. Is this a, you know, 10 out of 100 here chance that they pull off something like that? Because that would be a big move.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And, I mean, that's the one thing that you see in the, you know, in the NFC West. There's so many big moves. And so it's like, for example, you know, we had San Francisco and Seattle trying to do something with Julio Jones, but it didn't make much sense for Seattle, particularly knowing that, you know, they've got the idea that, hey, It's going to be $15.3 million of base salary, and that just, it wouldn't work cap-wise. But in this case, it works cap-wise. And then also, it just buys you a year to, you know, clean up the cornerback position. And that's why it's like, now the only problem is if he thinks he can come here, Gilmore, and get more money, that may not work. But again, you can see that if indeed they can get something done, I mean, Gilmore then can be here for $7 million. Then he'll leave after the season. You'll get a third round compensatory because he'll be 31, so he'll get a pretty decent deal somewhere else. You have Trey Boston. You have all the other young cornerbacks because, again, all these cornerbacks, for the most part, except for Boston, are up after this year. So, I mean, I just think that if you can pull this one off and not have to give up too much as far as draft choice compensation, it's a great deal.
How many teams do you expect to be realistically in on Gilmore?
Yeah, it's funny because I was just starting to go through that, and you know, unfortunately, I have to go figure out who still needs cornerbacks. Now you can say that San Francisco could be in that mix, Philadelphia could be in that mix, but also I think you have to be fair to Gilmore. You can't send him to a bad team. So the 49ers are going to be good. You know, you could maybe say that the Raiders could be a candidate for him. Jacksonville's looking for a cornerback, but nobody's going to go there. Houston, no. You can't see that. But I counted up there's maybe about four or five teams. New Orleans doesn't have the cap room to be able to do something like that, but they need a cornerback. So I think that you can have a lot of teams in the mix, and then Detroit needs one, but they're going to be a bad team. So it's like, you take the teams that have a chance to be good, and you may put San Francisco, Seattle toward the top of the list. Indy could be in the mix too. They've got a good defense, but they could probably use one more cornerback. So I would think if you're Bill Belichick and you do things the way he does, right, which of course he'll take a guy that's at the top of his game, and then before he starts to drop off, he'll get rid of him. I mean, he's done it so many times. He's done it with Richard Seymour, yeah. Chandler Jones, Darrell Revis. I mean, you go through that whole list, Trey Flowers,
Jamie Collins.
Yeah. And so it's like, and if he can be reasonable as far as, not asking too much as far as draft choice, and you can see that, when they make a move, they can make a move pretty fast. That, to me, puts Seattle in the mix. And John Snyder's going to be in on just about every deal.
Yeah. Well, and he is going into his 10th year.
Yeah.
But like you said, for a one-year deal, that'd be okay. The other thing, John, I think that they do a good job of developing corners here.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Richard Sherman, fifth rounder. Deshaun Shedd, who was a safety. I didn't think they would ever get him to play corner. And now he's coaching over there, by the way.
But Coach Ed.
Yeah. So I think, to me, I feel like that what they have right now, it's not like, it's an absolute necessity that they get him in here. It would be interesting, but I do feel like they have enough competition and that they've had good luck that if you're going to, go one way or the other on this one, I think you bank on the fact that the Seahawks have been able to – develop good cornerbacks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no doubt about it. But if you want to say the one what at the moment, what would be the biggest question mark in the team? And you probably have to say cornerback because technically,
agreed.
I mean, we can say that Akello Witherspoon and DJ Reed are the leading candidates to be the starters, but we don't know for sure, and we don't know how good they can be. We know Reed did well last year. We know a couple years ago Witherspoon did some good things. You have Trey Flowers still here, but last couple years hasn't been good for Witherspoon. So it's like, but I mean, here's a chance, and it kind of goes into that Russell Wilson thinking. Here's a chance to go for gold. Because now, again, if you have three out of your four Pro Bowlers in the secondary, it's not going to be the Legion of Boom, but it's a pretty good Legion.
Yeah. Well, you know what? And, John, maybe this isn't fair to Ethan Posick, but when you said biggest question mark, corner comes up. What about center? What about that one I'm kind of torn on. I like Ethan Posick. He looked really good in the first part. He kind of went the way of the offense.
Yeah,
I feel
yeah.
like when they were great, he was great. And then, same thing when things went south, he seemed to struggle a little bit.
Yeah, but also it's like, okay, I still think that they should go for Austin Reeder, the starting center for the Kansas City Chiefs, who's still out there, because he's got starting experience. He'll sign probably for the minimum. And so I think that deal would make a lot of sense to me. And then you have Fuller, you have Reader. And then if necessary, I mean, you saw that Damian Lewis filled in a little bit at that spot last year for a game. Dexter didn't do too bad. But, there would be an upgrade there. But at least in the case of the center, you know who the starting center is. It's Ethan Posick. Right now at the cornerback position, we're kind of guessing. We have an educated guess, but is it really going to be right?
Yeah.
710-710 is the Mac and Jack's text line. If you guys have questions for John Clayton, we'll try to pass some of those along. John, what do you make of this whole Le'Veon Bell taking shots at Andy Reid? And I told Dave, if a player's in a dispute with Andy Reid, I just automatically take Andy Reid's side.
Yeah,
I agree. Of who he's been, how he's perceived by 99.9% of the people that ever interact with him. I don't care who the player is.
Yeah.
And Bell is shown to be a bit of a knucklehead at times, certainly in his career. What do you make of these latest things where he tried to sort of walk it back, saying, I'm not going to apologize for what I said, but I could have kept it behind closed doors?
Yeah, I think that he's getting himself out of the league, basically. I mean, he's burning bridges. And because, you know, when you look and you see, because, I mean, you know, I just think he doesn't like to play anymore, to be honest with you. And, you know, because here Andy was willing to do it, bring him in. But also it's like, hey, Le'Veon, you think you're the best back in the league. Why did you go to Kansas City, which has a very good first-round pick that Andy Reid thinks is maybe the perfect running back that he's always been looking for? He ranked right up there with LeSean McCoy and some of the other great backs that he's had. And so it's like he went there because he didn't have to work. He wasn't going to have to do anything. I mean, he's going to be sitting on the bench, you know, collecting some money, going to the Super Bowl, and it's like, and so he took the easy way out as opposed to going to other teams that would work him and give him a chance to play. I mean, I just get the feeling that, you know, he had to rip Adam Gase. He said all the scheme was the reason I didn't do well with the Jets. Now Andy Reid, don't like him. It's like, I'd retire before I get back with him. It's like, well, retire. I mean, you know, you're the one that took the stupid tact of you had the franchise number for Pittsburgh. You decide to sit out the whole season, not make any money. I mean, you get less money on the market to go to the Jets, and you blow the chance in about a year and a half with the Jets.
You know, John doesn't like it when he says stupid. Yeah. So, I like the way you say that.
Is there interest in him from anywhere? I mean, he's currently unsigned.
No.
Is he looked at as a pariah, or he's past his prime? What's the view of him around the league?
Not good. I mean, I think because you notice, I mean, he's not made any visits. There doesn't seem to be any interest hardly in him whatsoever. And I guess you shouldn't be surprised. I mean, what is now, what, 3-4 years since he's done anything good? I mean, he went to the Jets and, you know, he got, you know, what, $13 million a year on that contract. And he had a 3.3 average, which is the worst in Jet history as far as his, you know, rushing average. It was worst in Jets history. Hmm. And so it's like, you know, when was the last time he's played some good football? I mean, you have to really scratch your head. I mean, yeah. You scratch your head and ring the bell because I can't figure out what it is.
Mm-hmm. Like you said, he doesn't want to work.
No.
It is. It's work for these guys. And, you know, and love of the game, I mean, you have to have that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's gone bye-bye for him. We were talking to Lindsay Theory, who covers the Rams for ESPN, and talking about Matthew Stafford. John, I think we've talked about him a lot on this show over the years, just because he's kind of a hard one to figure out. Now, mm-hmm. He's going into his 13th year. I mean, he's always been like, you've always been like, yeah, he's good, but, you know, is he great? I mean, he's thrown, shoot, he threw for 5,000 his third year in his career, and, you know, 4,900. I mean, he's been really, really good, but how much do you think this offense is going to help him? Are we going to see him all of a sudden emerge as being one of those franchise type quarterbacks?
He is a franchise quarterback. And
yeah, but I mean, franchise quarterbacks win in the playoffs?
No. I mean, not if they're going up against other quarterbacks with better teams. I mean, he's just had bad teams around him. I always want to call it the Archie Manning theory, because Archie Manning was a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback and certainly, you know, put up one Hall of Fame son, and we'll see about what Eli fits in the mix here with his two Super Bowl victories and that. But Archie was great I mean, he's one of the best in the game, but he couldn't do anything as far as winning because the teams were so bad down in New Orleans. And it's the same thing for Detroit. I mean, you know, Detroit's had bad defenses. They've had bad coaches. They've had, you know, ownership that hasn't done much. And so it's like they're constantly changing the roster and changing coaches and maybe sometimes changing coaches a little bit too late. But you know, it's like he's 0-4 in the playoffs. I mean, it's like, you know, Kirk Cousins has not won a playoff game. And he's a good quarterback. But I think that, you know, you're looking at a former first pick in the draft who's very talented. This is he goes now with the Rams, the best team he's been on in his career.
Mm-hmm. Mm. You know, it's funny.
And by the way, you know where Lindsay grew up, right?
Oh, gosh. Did she go to your high school, John?
No. No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Does she live in your neighborhood?
Oh, she grew up here.
Yeah, we're about, I'd
two
say...
2 doors down from the professor.
No. Actually, about 8 to 10 houses from the BMAC.
Oh, okay.
She lives between you and Scott Service, right?
No, she lives past the BMAC.
Okay. Okay.
Right. Why did she go to LA and cover the Rams? Why didn't she stay here and do
the
Seahawks?
Opportunity.
I don't know.
You know, I was just looking at Archie Manning's record, John. Mm-hmm. According to Pro Football, not Focus, but reference,
yeah.
Yeah, 35-101-3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Archie didn't win.
What was his completion percentage? I'm just curious. We talked about quarterbacks in those days where
his average is 55%.
Not bad. Mm. It's better than Bradshaw, I think, who was at
53 or something like that.
Yeah. If you look at like Elway, I want to say Elway is like 57.
So crazy.
It's fascinating to me. But, John, the game has gotten much more favorable for the quarterbacks in the offense, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it went in cycles because, again, it was a running game, defensive game back in the 70s. Then Bill Walsh came in with the that basketball-style West Coast offense, and that picked things up and it added some percentages for Elway and all the quarterbacks from 83. And then, you still had a little bit of a defensive run right when the Cowboys with Jimmy Johnson was taking control with Troy Aikman and all those different things. And then finally you get to 1998 when Peyton Manning comes in, and then he starts opening the game up even more, particularly with the way that he was calling plays and doing different things. And then Tom Brady came in, and all of a sudden it became just a great league for quarterbacks, and the numbers keep getting up and getting better and better and better.
John, the 415 wants to know, is Marquise Blair the leading candidate to win that slot cover corner spot?
Marquise Blair, debatable. I mean, because again, we'll see where Trey Boston fits. I know they prefer him to be on the outside.
Trey Brown.
I mean, so I think you can see that. I think you can look at you still got Ugo Amadi, but I mean, there's no doubt that he's going to be in the mix because particularly if they go two tight ends against him and you still have a big receiver. I mean, he's big, and so I think you can put him out there. But he's definitely in the mix. I don't know if he's the favorite though.
Yeah. He looked really good out there the other day, running around anyway. So, we'll see what happens.
Who did, Brown or Boston?
No. I'm talking about Blair. You're going to get me screwed up now. How about, did we ask about Daniil Hunter?
No, we didn't.
Yet? No, okay. You didn't. No.
But even if we did, you can do that. It's
Kyler Murray playing baseball.
Yeah, I was going to ask that next.
All right. Yeah, anyway, the deal that Daniil Hunter did, you have the details of that, John?
Sketchy details. I mean, I guess what they did is that they gave him $5.6 million as a signing bonus. They added like about an $18 million deal at the back end of his contract, but we haven't seen the whole deal yet. But I mean, he was complaining like crazy, but they did take care of him after he missed most of the season last year with an injury. So they need his pass rush, and they need more pass rush. Also, they're in the final stages of seeing if they can get a deal done with Sheldon Richardson and bring him back to Minnesota.
Yeah. So, 14 and a half sacks last year. The last 2 years. Daniil Hunter.
He was out last year.
He missed last year.
Yeah.
Did he opt out or was he injured?
No, he was hurt.
Yeah. So he had 14 and a half sacks the previous 2 years. So, pretty solid.
By the way, some of the texters pointing out that Kirk Cousins beat the Saints, I think, in 19 in the divisional playoffs.
Oh, okay. So yeah. He got the one win. Right.
Yeah. He's got one.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what that would be? Would be one more than Matthew Stafford has.
That would be true.
Yeah.
One more than Andy Dalton have. And he's QB number one in Chicago.
At least that's what he'll tell you.
Yeah. But well, that's what the coaches say.
Kirk Cousins, he won because of that ridiculous play by the Saints. Remember where the safety turned down?
Oh, right.
Hit the guy.
Yeah.
And they miraculously scored a touchdown. I can't remember who it was.
I don't recall either.
Yeah.
I figured if anybody was going to remember, it'd be you.
I just thought that it was basically a play that was, I think it came about because the guy didn't want to get a penalty for spearing or, you know, hitting a defenseless. I don't think there's such a thing on the field. Once you walk across the lines, you're defensive. Not defenseless.
Yeah, and that's why I'm against the idea of making it a spot foul type penalty, or making it a 15 yards.
Yeah, like take college.
I that's why I don't like it, because again, I mean, it's going to take away offense, and it's like, hey, we watch offense being taken away in baseball so much. Why do you want to take away offense? Because if you're a defensive back and you have a choice on being beaten for a 35 yard play or get a 15 yard penalty, you'll crack the guy, hurt him, and then try to take the 15 yards.
John, the 253, or no, it just refreshed. There it is, 253. How is Jimmy G looking in San Francisco, and what are Jacob Eason's odds in Indy?
He's looking pretty good. I mean, his spirits are good. Again, it's not like they're doing a lot, but I know, for example, spent a lot of time last week talking to John Lynch because I have a Washington Post piece coming out tomorrow on the 49ers and their off season. And so, Jimmy's taking it well, but I mean, Trey Lance is really doing a good job. I'm not saying that he's going to wrestle away playing time, but they feel good about both. But here's where the big deal is, and the communication factor with Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, they kept Jimmy totally informed that they were going to get a quarterback. Totally. They kept his agent informed, Don Yee. They made sure that there was no question. It's like, listen, it's not like we don't like you. We like you. We want you to start this year, but we need to find that long-term quarterback of the future. I mean, your contract runs out next year. You're making $27.5 million. You missed 23 of 48 games, but we still love you as a quarterback, but we got to find that long-term answer, and that long-term answer is Trey Lance.
That might have been the quote of the year, I thought, offseason, when Kyle Shanahan said,
"Oh yeah."
I can't guarantee that he's going to be alive.
Mm-hmm. No, we can't guarantee that anybody is going to be alive over the weekend.
We're all lucky.
Yeah.
We made it past that day. John, we'll talk again tomorrow.
All right, sounds good.
There you go. By the way, the texters are going crazy. That was Case Keenum to Stephon Diggs.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. And then we got a, geez, you guys even know football?
Yeah, I don't know. It was a few years ago.
If you don't know that play, then you don't know football.
You don't know football.
Well, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the texters, they have their opinions.
Yeah, they do.
Let's not group them all together, though.
Well, there's a lot of them. Wrong again! That was Case Keenum. There's so much joy. If we...
Oh, I know.
I love how happy they get if we... It was a Tuesday, not Monday, idiot. You don't even know baseball. They can't wait to pounce. I love it. I love it. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Once a strength for this Mariners team, but is the bullpen becoming a liability? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This happy hour is brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Coming up at 5 o'clock, we'll talk some Mariner baseball with Daniel Kramer. Covers the Mariners for MLB.com, so stay tuned for that conversation. You guys can text in throughout the show, 710-710 to the Mac and Jack's text line. A lot of people, as I said, they're very happy when we make a mistake. And then somebody sent a text says, the thing is, we're happy a lot. Well,
hey,
done.
That's good for me and Tex on Friday. You're just like 4 or 5 days early. So,
yeah, that's good. Solid shot. I like it. I can appreciate that.
It's a good one. That. Yeah, it was well done. That's kind of what we go for. But maybe a little bit drastic or dramatic saying that we don't know football because we forgot that it was Case Keenum instead of Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, I know we should be cataloging every play from every other team, but we don't. I'm sorry. I'm not going to remember. Hey, remember when the Chiefs played the Bills and this happened? No. Well, I can give you a vague recollection. I couldn't tell you specifically this guy threw the ball to this guy and it was a first 33 yards and it was a first down. I have no idea. I don't catalog it. I don't have enough room.
I like it. The 425 writes with like all these exclamation points. Wrong again.
So good.
That's good stuff.
So good.
You know who does remember that stuff?
Who?
DJ Wilder.
Does he? Do you remember plays from every other team?
Well, he's the one that came in here and said, no, it was Case Keenum that threw the digs, and then it was the next year or whatever.
Okay.
I remember.
That's
great.
Hey,
I can't remember what he just said during the break.
Better memory than I've got. I'll watch other games and enjoy them, but I'm not going to sit there and I don't remember who did what and at what, unless it's something just completely out of the ordinary or miraculous.
Well, that was miraculous, though.
Yeah.
Remember that? DJ, why do you
remember
it?
No, I don't remember it, Dave. We just established that.
No, it was the only thing that stood out to me on that play. It was in Minnesota.
Nothing did because it was Case Keenum and you thought it was Cousins.
Well, what stood out to me is I swear that safety, and it's a good safety, the kid, I think he's a rookie for the Saints. Can't remember his name. Okay, so text it in.
You even know football, bro?
I swear he laid off that hit. Like they were trying to get down within field goal range, and, you know, they didn't want to get a penalty there that would have taken them, further. And then I don't know if those two guys ran into each other or they just totally missed on the whole thing. And I thought it was because of the penalties nowadays. You know, if you hit that guy and they deem him a defenseless player, then you could have got a huge penalty and put him in field goal range.
Hey, let's get to this Mariners conversation because I think it's interesting. The bullpen. I've said this many times. If not for the bullpen, Dave, this team would be well below 500. They're under 500 right now, but they'd be well below 500. Think of what the bullpen was doing when this team could barely scratch out a run or two. This offense, dreadful to start the year. And when they did get a lead, they were able to hang on. They were outstanding. Now you fast forward 60-some games into the season. They've been springing leaks. They've been showing vulnerability. They have not been great. And DJ and I were looking up the numbers during before the show. And where are they? I think they're 19th in the league in ERA and 21st in batting average against. That's bottom half. That's not great, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
For a team that we were talking about, Graveman and Misevich, and it felt like just about everybody, except for Montero, that they were throwing out there was just get it done. And it was, and we even said it back then, it's not fair to expect this is who they're going to be all year. I mean, they were just performing at a different level. They were amongst the best and at one point the best bullpen in all of baseball. But as you see those numbers trend down, you start going, man, are they becoming now what was – they were once a huge portion of what was positive about this team. And now I'm looking at them going, man, are they a liability? Is this – who do you count on now? Who do you feel great about when they take the mound? Still Graveman, I would say. I'm going to give him a pass because he's been out. He's been out, but he hadn't given up a run the entire season, and then in back-to-back games he gave up a run. Okay. I'm not going to panic with him yet because of what he's had to go through and coming back and maybe finding a rhythm. But at this point, who do you look at and say, yep, I've got no doubts when they're in the game?
Well, I would still go with Kendall Graveman just because, yeah, it's a couple of runs. I mean, he was just entirely shutting people down. You look at the innings pitched, once you get past the rotation, the most innings pitched is Rafael Montero. And he's actually pitched the same number of innings as Logan Gilbert. Maybe you start there. Maybe you start there as far as how you're viewing Montero. I mean, why? It's funny. You listen to Tom Murphy. You know, he talks about what great stuff he has and, you know, has lots of confidence in Rafael Montero. It's just, I don't know, is it one of these things where kind of like when we had Fernando Rodney, are we just looking at it wrong? Why is, you know, Service obviously is the expert.
Yeah.
Not those of us that are sitting at home on our couch watching the game. But, yeah, it's kind of mystifying that, you know, I don't know, maybe he turns it around. Maybe these kinds of things are, you know, bad luck, whatever. But it does seem like, and it was just the most frustrating part, I thought, of Saturday's game. When they lost an extra innings was that, well, most frustrating is that they start with a base runner on second base. But
and you're still over there going, yeah, did I miss a hit? How did they get there?
I'm rewinding. How did he get there? But the fact that he had six pitches and got two outs, it was just, you know, you're thinking, okay, we're fine. You know, they had a three-run lead at that point. That's what made it frustrating, and I feel like Montero gets in those types of situations a lot, like Fernando Rodney. So, you know, a lot of times, it's kind of a long way of saying that, you know, we just blame the bullpen. But, you know, usually it's like one, maybe two guys.
Yeah, it's not always a collective fail.
Right. It's not
everybody. There have been those moments. We've had those moments, certainly. And in this game, you could go, you know, Montero was a disaster. Graveman gave up a run. And then Seawald with the error that ultimately ended the game. Where it's so amazing, is it? You could watch a pitcher throw a ball 100 miles an hour with pinpoint precision. But you ask him to lob a ball 30 feet from the mound to first base or to home, and all of a sudden you see their arm look all goofy, and they're all like they're shot putting it. Like they just tense up, and all of a sudden it's so unnatural looking. It's the oddest thing, but it happens. It's so common. And we saw it with Seawall. I mean, where the hell was that ball going? I mean, Murphy had to dive to his left to even get his mitt on the ball, much less field it and make a tag. I mean, that was about as routine. He was ready with his foot on the plate to turn a double play there. Throw it home, throw it to first, boom, double play. Instead, game over because Seawald couldn't shot put it to him in the vicinity of the plate.
Well, I understand there's lots of pressure and everything, but a lot of the pitchers, what you see in those situations, same thing coming off the mound, getting fielding a grounder. It's like they've only pitched their whole life, since they were a kid. They haven't played. You know, didn't you ever play second base or third base or, just a throw like that? You know, like you said, I mean, it's within like inches of where, their pinpoint accuracy. And now you can't just throw it to first, especially when you got a guy like Evan White, say, where he's got a huge range. But I think a lot of that has to do with they just didn't go, they were just so specialized. And, that's what Pete Carroll and his wife Glenna always talk about. And I know Will Disley is really into, having kids when they're young just play all kinds of different sports because I think you get less injuries and then you just get a more well-rounded athlete, and that's not what we saw.
All right, coming up, a top Mariner prospect got tossed from a minor league game on Friday. We'll listen to that when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial. Every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
All right, start us off here. Mariners number 7 prospect, according to MLB Pipeline, catcher Cal Raleigh got ejected in Friday night's game with the Tacoma Rainiers when the game was in hand. They're up 7-2 with 2 outs in the 9th inning. And he did not like a certain non-strike call by the home plate umpire. Here's the call.
He's sad. Yeah, the pitch is a ball. And there goes Cal Raleigh. He said something, and Lou Williams just tossed him, and Cal Raleigh's going to get his money's worth now as he is irate. He didn't even turn and look at the umpire. He just said something, and Lou Williams gave him the heave-ho, and now Tony Arterich has been tossed as the Rainiers manager gets ejected as well, and now the third base umpire Clayton Hamm has come down the line.
Did you see that video?
I sure did.
I love. First of all, you can hear it in the call, and he's like, pause, pause, pause. That's a ball. I mean, it was dead red, middle, right there. He caught it, and he sat there, and you can see his head moving. Like you see him talking, but he's still facing the pitcher,
right,
and holding his glove in that spot where it was a strike. I don't know what the ump was looking at, and it's raining, and then he turns around and just starts letting the ump have it, and the manager comes out. But I like that he sat there holding it, and you see just the head bobbing like he's yelling at him,
right,
with his back to him.
Seeing Cal Raleigh, because we interviewed him, and he's very mild-mannered, nice guy. I just, I always say, be afraid of the really nice guys, because when they snap, they're dangerous. Like if DJ, we talk about Lefko.
Yeah.
Like if DJ ever, he's always happy, smiling, everything, but he loses it, just clear. Yeah,
clear
the
building.
I want to see the dark side. We saw that from Cal Raleigh.
It's being bottled up.
That's right.
There's no way he's this happy.
No, but I loved seeing that. I mean, just the, I don't think I've ever seen, I mean, I'm sure it's happened before, but I've never seen like a minor leaguer get tossed out of a game. You just don't hear or see that much about that situation. But
yeah.
I wonder what, it was probably going on the whole night, and I also, if you're a pitcher, you love that from your catcher.
Oh, yeah, he's got your back.
You're getting squeezed, and that was just, like you said, it was just right down the middle.
It was a meatball.
Right.
It really was.
Sweeping the dial.
All right, this one, a little bit of a sad and also gross story. Tigers pitcher Bo Burrows was making his first appearance with the club yesterday. And let's just say the nerves got the better of him.
Oh, Burrows looks like he's sick. In fact, I'm pretty sure he is. First time in the major leagues this year, and the emotions of the moment got the better of him.
They're going to check on Burrows.
So, yeah, he was throwing up on the mound. He ended up going an inning and two thirds. And then just more salt on the wound, the Tigers sent him back down AAA.
Yeah, how did he do in that inning and two thirds? Did he get lit up?
Not great. He now has an ERA of like 28.
So. Ah, okay. So they didn't send him down because he threw up. He just didn't perform well, it sounds like. And that's rough on a public stage like that with cameras and a stadium and people watching. Yeah. You used to throw up before the game, but you had the privacy of a bathroom. You didn't have the stadium watching you.
Well, this was back in 1983. I have a picture somewhere. I can't find it, but it's like the play is starting. I'm scraping, which means I'm sort of, you know, running sideways, going towards the line of scrimmage. It's like an outside play. And whoever the photographer is just did a beautiful job of, there's just a sheet of red Gatorade coming out of my helmet. So as I'm running outside, I'm puking at the same time. And you could see, like, it looks like it's like a plastic, piece of plastic or something.
That wasn't nerves, though.
I don't remember if that was nerves or what, if I was just maybe...
fatigue and...
yeah, tired.
I've seen guys at Seahawks practice throw up a number of times.
Yeah.
I saw Alan Branch throw up right before he came to sit down with us out there.
Oh.
You're walking off the field, took the helmet off. You could see him with hands on the hips, looking, breathing deeply. And you're going, man, he's tired. And all of a sudden, just let it fly. And then had a seat next to us.
You like a breath mint?
You want some gum or anything?
How about a slice of gum?
A slice? It's a stick of gum, Dave. It's not a slice.
Sweeping the dial.
Okay, so as we know, the super regional round of the NCAA tournament for baseball was happening over the weekend. Yeah. And the number one overall seed, Arkansas, got upset by NC State, so now they're out of the tournament. But redshirt senior pitcher Kevin Copps stayed after and signed autographs for about an hour and a half. And when he was asked why after such a heartbreaking loss, here was his answer.
One of the big things I think about is, it's actually kind of, I think it's a quote from Michael Jordan. He's talking about playing as hard as he can every game because it might be someone's one and only game or a chance to see him in person. So maybe that's someone's one and only chance to come watch a game. So I feel like it's important to give back to the fans because they give so much to us.
He's right. What he gets kid. It. He gets it.
Yeah.
Might be the only time they get a chance to see him, and he may be their favorite player. And you know, I think athletes, entertainers, musicians, actors, anybody who's in the spotlight, a celebrity, I think often forget how little it takes to make a lifelong impact on somebody. A moment, a word, a handshake, a high five, whatever, an autograph, a picture. And I understand there are times for it and you're in the middle of dinner, people approach you, things like that. But when you're on the field like that, you take that moment. Your little kid or somebody who's looking up to this guy, he's your favorite player forever. You're going to talk about that time you talked to him. We just had somebody text in, oh, yeah, I met Julio Rodriguez. You know, what a great cat. I mean, that person is going to tell that story to everybody.
Right. Yeah, it's really cool, especially for a college kid.
Yeah.
You know, to have that perspective. But, yeah, I think I remember my mom telling me a story that I was, like, reaching over to grab a little kid. It was always kind of weird to me when adults came up. I don't know. I mean, it's never like I wouldn't not sign it or anything, but isn't that kind of for little kids?
I mean, I'm still a fan. I don't know that I'd ask for
anybody.
Would
you go get an
autograph
of anybody?
Have I or would I?
Or would you now, at this point in your life?
Athlete, probably not.
What about you, DJ?
I don't think athlete, but I think there'd be a couple people in, like, different outlets of, like, fame that I'd probably ask for an autograph from, for sure.
Like, I met Steven Tyler. I asked for his autograph. And Robin Zander, singer of Cheap Trick.
Oh, yeah?
Couldn't have been a cooler guy. Uh-huh. That's a story I'll tell forever, how cool he was.
Yeah.
And it's a moment. It's literally like they're not going to remember it 2 seconds later, but that's something we'll remember and we take with us. So I love when athletes or actors or musicians do that, because it lasts.
By the way, we're down to Final Four in the college baseball tournament, I believe.
I think we're getting close. I think the World Series is about to start. Do they go with four? I'm not sure, actually. I haven't really watched since my buddy was in college.
Well, I'm looking at Stanford versus NC State. Anyway, I watched Stanford play the other day. I'm trying to remember who they played. Anyway, Stanford's got a pretty good baseball program.
You used to love the baseball players at Stanford, huh?
Some of them. Some of them were kind of cocky.
Yeah.
No, there weren't specifically guys I didn't like. It just that in the house that I lived in, the football players seemed to be more humble than the baseball players.
Yeah. Yeah. That seems to carry over into the pro level, too.
Yeah.
Often. All Sometimes. Right. This happy hour is brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Coming up, Daniel Kramer, who covers the Mariners for MLB.com, is going to join us next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.